Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagone, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evenings and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anahuacis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Beginning of Part 1. Please refer to program notes for the scheduled date and time of Part 2. Thank you for supporting Prophecy Keepers Radio with your tax-deductible offerings to the Oklava Native American Church of the White Roots of Peace.
Hello, everybody, from Booker County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. This is Prophecy Keepers Radio coming to you, and this is Blue Art. And we've got our old friend Red Elk with us this evening. We're really privileged, Grandfather Red Elk, to have you with us again. I guess it's been since February. It's long overdue. And I understand you've got some things you wanted to tell us.
Yes, this is correct. And Blue Water, thanks for having me on again. It, the first one was kind of funky. I couldn't get to see. Hardly anything. I kept getting interrupted by something wrong. Well, forget it. But hopefully this will go better. That, I would like to share with the listeners who I am, what tradition is about, what the inner Hyoka is about, and under the authority of who I I worked. And I've been out here for, in the area of 5 years, publicly, you know, worldwide. And I get a lot of, and that's what they think, and I feel I have no enemies. It's just an understanding. But nevertheless, you can't convince everybody. But I noticed a lot of people, mostly in the full blood, the First Nations people, they seem to have a tendency of, well, there's no nice way of putting it, they have a tendency of being able to write and being able to talk, but seem kind of limited in their reading ability. And they're making some very stabbing, accusations. And without test cause, as far as I can see, if they would just read on my website, instead of word of mouth, but word of mouth gets bent out of shape. It, first off, my name is, Dr. Siske. It's one of the nation's way of saying Red Elk. And that is my name. It is my legal name. It, I have a family name, too, actually. One Native American that's passed down through my mother's side. And another one, white, that my mother forced us to take. My mother was raised in a time when Indian was deemed to be Indian, was to be worse than a black man and the derogatory name of the black man during those times. And she just went, she wanted nothing to do with being Indian. And she brought around telling everybody that she was an Egyptian because of her hygiene bones and all that. And forced the family into whitening. That's with my mother's problem, not mine. I'm Red Elk. I want all who are hearing to make this permanent in your ears. I am not a Mr. Red Elk. That is not a surname. I have only one name, Red Elk. No first, no last. And it, I am related to none of the Red Elks across our land of North America. I know Mr. Red Elk. And naturally, because I've got the name Red Elk, they come at me and a little bit angry. I'm using their name. Well, my gosh, do the whites jump on Mr. Smith for using their name? Do they jump on Mr. Canasta for using their name? The Indians are kind of crazy. I know Indians from many nations who in the past were literally enemies of each other. And they'll be darned if they don't have the name Red Elk. Names are just names, period. And they're open to everybody. In my case, it was given in ceremony. Understand that. This is my ceremonial name. Legally, I have changed it to my ceremonial name. I've gotten away from the white name, totally. Only about 5 people, my wife included, call me by my white name. And shocks me to hear it. And it's just the way it is. And I will not give it out. You have no reason to have it. And I am who I am. And the name is, again, lock this in your memory, please. The name is ceremonial, given during a naming ceremony. And at the same time, not one that I was any too pleased with it, to be honest with you. I thought it was rather a dumb name. And it was a full 12 months before. going and intersecting the way of the red man's road into the black man, or the black road, the white man's way. We are to share with one another. This is why we, the Native Americans, South Americans, North Americans, Canada included, have been given the sacred thoughts and the sacred holdings as we've been given to be shared at this time. That is what Red Elk, this one, is all about. Now, I am a medicine man. I am a what I am, a spiritual advisor, whatever, kind of like a preacher, I guess. Hold a moment, please. And it is untraditional to tell people that. I belong to three societies and am an honorary member of a board. The society that is the society, as far as I'm concerned, out of all of them, is called Inner Hayoka, or Hayoka. I also am a member of the Hayoka Society. I am a member of the Red Web Society, an honorary member of the Twisted Hair Caretaker Section of the Crystal Skulls. And it's just an honorary member, nothing special. And nevertheless, the society that I was invited into, and the most important society, as far as I'm concerned, is the Inner Hayoka. I doubt strongly if there are more than four people in North America, very, very old people, that have even heard of such a thing as the Inner Hayoka. Many, many, many know of the Hayoka. And by the way, I have gotten reports that I'm not this, I'm not that Indian, so how can I belong to the Hayoka? My brothers and sisters, hear me true. The Hayoka are not limited to one or two nations there. They have Hayokas in just about every nation that exists in North America. So, those who think that just because they have Hayoka, they're the only ones, are all wet, frankly. And, like it or not, that's the way of it. But, Inner Hayokas are, well, like I say, they're probably four, maybe only three people that have even heard of this society. And this has been an ongoing society for over 2,000 years. Always limited, originally 13, but since the original, always limited to 12. All are extremely long livers. I myself have been told I will live to an age that I'm not comfortable even thinking about. And well beyond what man lives to today. And I can kind of believe it because, as I said, the Inner Hayoka, they're all very long, long livers. And, well, let me tell you a little bit. First, I think I have to tell you about me, this one, Red Elk. This one does not like to call myself I, and I'm this one, just trying to overcome that I. I make you important, and I'm not important. This one makes me simply one of us, one of you. And that's the way I like to be. Just one, just someone, no one special. And, well, this one was born in Ellensburg, Washington State. That's Eastern Washington. And though I cannot recall my baby years, one event, yes, but not concerning this, though I cannot recall my baby years, I do recall a North American Indian, and from the age of about 2 years old, I can actually recall this gentleman. We lived in a rodeo town, and lived literally right next to the rodeo grounds. And the by Indians. We'd come down. No cars. They had no cars, no trucks at that time. But they did come by horseback and wagon and walking. And they would come and knock on our door and ask permission to camp on our land. And always the permission was granted, despite my mother's likes and dislikes. She did have a respect for people in general. And the camp would be set, and many Indians would be there and playing their gambling games and preparing for the rodeo, usually 2-3 days before the rodeo began. But during this time of camp set up, everything settled down. A day, 2 days later, one lone Indian would come down, Greg Hill. And we all called him Chief, and I don't know his real name, but we all called him Chief. We didn't call the other Indian Chief. This gentleman was held by the looks of it with the most highest regard by the Indian nation that was there, the Yakima people that were there. And he would come down the hill, and he always wore a blanket, a loincloth, and moccasins. And that was it. Nothing else. Not even a feather in his hair. And no shirt over his chest. It was blanket, loincloth, and moccasins. And generally, he would carry, a grouse, or maybe two rabbits, or maybe two or three grouse, or whatnot, in one hand. And occasionally, a stick. This was his throwing stick with which he would kill these little beans for food. And this gentleman would always come to the front door and stand a few yards or feet away from the front steps. Never go to the door knock. And one of us kids, there were five of us, we would somebody would run and tell Mom, she's here. And Mom would come to the door and look out, and he would nod at her, and she would nod at him and shut the door, and he would turn around and go to the outhouse and shut the door behind him. She would come out with a brand new or fresh blanket, knock on the outhouse door. The door would crack open, and he would pass out his blanket and his loincloth and take her blanket. She would then wash the loincloth and the blanket, and she would rinse it and wring it out as best she could and flap it in the wind, flap these items in the wind, then go back with these damn things and knock on the door would open, she'd hand that in, and he'd hand out the blanket that he'd set in there with, and he would give her the food that he had collected on the way down for her services and for the family. We never heard this man speak a word of English. We all, including my mother, had no idea he could, or if he could. But the gentleman would then clothe himself and walk off into the camp. And the camp would suddenly become very silent, and people would line up and make a Red Sea's party. Some would go to the left, some to the right, and he'd walk through the middle, and there was the greatest respect, nodding of heads and recognition. And after the rodeo was over, everybody pulled up and would go home, including Chief. In short, we never saw Chief, except for that one time when he jumped out. Now, I can remember this at 2 years old. I can remember this at 3 years old. I can remember it at 4. But on my 4th year, something was different. He did as I have just told you. And then the rodeo was over, and it was time for everybody to break up and go home, and they were doing so. Again, he never returned. This time he did. And it kind of shocked all us kids. And we ran and told Mom. I think my little sister ran and told Mom, and my older sister too. She was out there, and she opened the door and looked out and started wringing her hands. She was afraid. Something was wrong. This was not in place. So she came out, and meanwhile, we kids, we kind of stood off to the side a little bit, afraid ourselves. We'd never seen sheep do this. And Mom looked at him, and he nodded at her, she nodded at him, and then he turned around and walked over to the pile of his kids, who were kind of cringing there. And they all kind of separated, all of us, and suddenly I was alone, you know. Everybody else had kind of gone their own separate ways and standing away from each other, and myself included. And old chief walks up to me, and he walks up to my left side and turned around. And he looked at my mother, and in perfect English, he said, as he put his right arm across my right shoulder, you know, from behind, and he looked at my mother and he said, one day this boy will grow up and do many great things amongst his people.
Prophecy Keeper, Prophecy Keeper.
On CEO. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
OCO is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the Seven Clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, M.D., oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de México, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee four times since the 1700s, and Spain five times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Bluewater sent you. Ski. Wado.
And then he placed his hand on my head, on the hair of my head, and looked down at me. And he had this most wonderful smile on his face. And it was just love. And he took his hand off, turned around, nodded goodbye, and left. My mother just stood there, actually wringing her hands, really literally wringing her hands. What did this around, my mother was quite afraid that I would grow up to be Indian. She didn't want anybody to be Indian in her family, including herself. And she had plenty to worry about. I never knew I wasn't Indian. But nevertheless, anyway, as said, I always thought I was Indian. And in fact, I was quite a bit Indian anyway. But Mom, as I said, she wanted nothing to do with that. She gave us white jeans. And we all went by white jeans. Then we legally made white jeans. And but nevertheless, as I grew from a little boy, we moved at the age of when I was four, very shortly after the 70s. We moved to Detroit, and I spent most of my youth in Detroit, in and around, you know, Ferndale, Utica, Hazel Park, Rose Point Woods, and so forth. And, but always I was Indian, as far as I was concerned. I went to school to the ninth grade, and I only went 34 days of that ninth grade. The rest of the time, I was constantly skipping school. I learned how to read. I learned how to write. I learned how to spell sufficiently, enough for people to understand. I'm a terrible misspeller. But nevertheless, I learned the basics, and I felt personally, even at that youthful age, that that was all I really needed. And as it turned out, frankly, I was right. I can have him subtract, and I can make sure I'm not getting cheated with my bank account, and so on and so forth. And I can write letters, and sort of, kind of, if you can understand my writing, my shorthand, as well as the spelling. But I'd do okay. I didn't need to be a rocket scientist and have all the algebra and stuff. And they weren't teaching in the schools the things that I really, really hungered to have. The things of the spirit, the things of Mother Earth, the things of the Indian ways of old. And so I went out and I started learning these things all on my own. We had a terrible joint officer. He was the fear of the whole school system there in Ferndale, Michigan. But he could never catch me, not once. Got everybody else, but he never got me. He never thought of going to the public library where I'd be sitting studying the old ways that I could find. He never thought of going into Detroit proper and going behind the Ford factory and this factory and that factory where the little creeks ran with oil and spare tires that are all ripped up and old refrigerators. And I'm not exaggerating. And that's where I was, tracking, chasing huge deer, and they're still around to this day there. And fishing, getting enormous fish out of these oil-laden little creeks and stuff. I don't know if they're edible or not. I never had them. I just wanted to practice catching them. And trapping, pheasants, and things like that. That didn't know how to make the traps. I can't tell them. I couldn't find any books on figure four traps and deadfalls and so forth. But I did know rat traps and mouse traps. And I set those, and I killed many, many, many birds and stuff that way. And very rarely did I get more than feathers because the town cats got them before I did. But nevertheless, that's what I was doing. I was sleeping in the culverts when there was no rain so that I'd be outside and hidden and covered. And, you know, my mother never knew where I was at or when I'd be home, poor woman. Never knew what I was doing. I couldn't tell her. She hated Indian-dom. Indian-dom, you know?
Uh-huh.
So, not dumb Indian, but Indian-dom. So much that I couldn't tell her that I was following and learning the old ways. I never once told her. In all the years that my mother lived, not one time did I tell her. Now, at age 10, at the very beginning of that 10th year, I was given the two necessary dreams to be a medicine man. And it was at that same age that I began my teaching. I sang a lot of high here. This one began his teaching. His learning of medicine. And the very first thing that I was taught was how to levitate. And I was taught at that time to, once you learn it, you park it. You never use it again. Once you know you've done it and can do it, once you test the teachings to find out if they're true or false and succeed in doing it, finding out if it was true, and it was, by the way, then you park it and you never do it again until you are told to do it. Therefore, I'm not a show-and-tell teacher. I'm not one with that kind of an ego. And I am a disappointment to many because I will. This one just simply will not show you. Who are you? You are not the Creator. When the Creator tells me to do these things, I do them. I do not do them as some will of a man, some will of a woman. I do it only when I am ordered to do so. You hear me now? I teach how to do these things. And if you are serious of learning, then you test them until they become fact in your life as they have in mine. But I'm not going to show you. Not unless the Creator informs me that I am to do so. Now, that's basically me. I spent 41 years learning medicine, when most will spend 7, maybe even 12 years, and the Cherokee up to 17, I understand. I spent 41 years learning medicine of North America, some of South America, some of the Maoris and the Hawaiians, some of the Africans, some of the Finland, some of Russian steppes, a little bit here, a little bit there. 41 years of learning, long, long time. And not being able to share it with anyone, just learn. In those 41 years, the Creator spoke to me and said, I am going to turn you over to the black side, the dark side, the satanic side, to be completely honest with you, the witches, the sorcerers. And he said, you will think I have left you, but do not doubt that I am with you. And I said, sir, why are you doing this? Why is it going to be? And he said, so you can know the enemy. And I spent 8.5 years learning the enemy. And I know the enemy well. I know the ways of the sorcerers. I know the ways of the witches. I know it, boy, and I know when it's used against me. And I know how to counteract it. I am thankful for 8.5 years of darkness in my life. 8.5 years of feeling that the Creator had abandoned me, but holding to His word that He's there. But I tell you, it was not a pleasant time. And I have learned some very, very wicked ways. Not one time did I apply those ways to anyone. I just learned them. And I have not applied them yet. And I have never applied it since. I just learned it. So when it comes against me, I recognize it. I know its source. And I know we can overpower it and overcome it. And I do not fight fire with fire. That just destroys the forest. No, I fight fire with a more powerful thing. I fight it with the thing that I have found. This one has found.
Go ahead.
3, 2, 1. The inner Hilka originally consisted of 13 men, North American Indian men, who followed and learned it from the knees and the feet and their dance with one man. This one man was called the Pale One, the Pale Teacher, and his name, the Son of God, Christ, to the rest of the world. Understand this, I'm not Mormon, I've never been a Mormon. I don't like your proselytizing and trying to make me Mormon. Don't care for it at all. And I've never been to a Mormon church, but that's your way. I'm not against a Mormon being a Mormon. I'm not against an Indian being a traditionalist. I'm not against a Muslim being a Muslim. But nevertheless, I have never taken to the Mormon's way of teaching, other than that the Christ was here in North America. And the original 13 learned at his feet. He came over here on one of his uncle's ships, who was trading with the American Indians, not so much in gold, a little bit, but then a little silver, but basically for copper. And they would sell their ships long ago up into, as close as they could into the Great Lakes, and then they would trade with the Indians. The Indians were not slaves. They trade was a fair thing. They would go and work when they wanted to, collect what they wanted, and when the so-called pale people came, they had a stockpile and they would trade. It was a good time. It was a fair time. And the Christ came on one of his uncle's ships, who was a well-to-do man, evidently. And he and one of his brothers, another uncle, evidently shared business together. And I think there were two different companies, but nevertheless, they helped each other out. And both were based in trade and transportation. Anyway, he came here to learn what we, our people, the native people of America at that time, had retained from the original time, the time of the two, the original two. The ones the way he called Adam and Eve. And he also came to share what he had learned in other places other than the Hebrew land. He went all over, from what we are told. Went to India, Tibet. He went all over. He, you know, learning. He truly hungered to learn and to know the ways of the Creator. And he came here to see what we had that he did not know of, and what we had retained, and to share what he had been given and taught and learned himself. Well, in those days, there was no medicine man. There really wasn't even a medicine woman, but the women were the healers, not the men. And the women being so close to the earth, while the man was out hunting the big game, the women were out picking plants and cutting themselves and so on and so forth, and finding plants here and there that did a good job of healing this and healing that. And there was the beginning of medicine. It was women, not men, that could take care of a wound or whatnot, a good hearty cough in the lungs and stuff. They've learned over their years and passed down. Also, they had retained from the original mother of all, Eve, if you would, and at that time period. And so too had our men retained some of that knowledge. But nevertheless, mankind, Indian mankind, eventually, you know, they looked over mama's shoulder and grandma's shoulder and auntie's shoulder and learned a little bit about this plant and that plant, and eventually in their machoism they kind of took over, and stupidly in their love, women let them. Until today, you got these people called medicine men, and they think you're boss. There's medicine women.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Uh-huh.
But back. I'll be back. You know, Harmon Makeover or whatever his name play. But nevertheless, he did leave. And for 212 years, throughout South and North America, there was no band-to-band warfare. No nation-to-nation warfare. He brought total peace from Eskimos to South America and then in between. We learned your trade. Oh, there was killings. Don't say there wasn't. With, you know, little family squabbles or something like that. And, but no gathering of great war parties and going at each other. But in time, as this 212 years slipped by, he didn't come back. And 212 years is both a long and a short time. It's a long time as you're living it, and it's a short time as far as history goes. But it doesn't take long to take an event and turn it into mythology. And that is what has happened here. And the Aztecs and the Mayans and so forth, they who worship the sun started worshiping the S-U-N when before they returned to the east from whence this S-O-N had come and gone and worshiped. But in time that got lost. And they've heard the stories about his sacrifice, his death, his blood, and they twisted it, started sacrificing humans on a stone, in vast numbers, trying to emulate the great teacher, the Pale One. Now on the East Coast, they're well all over American Indianism. There's a story of Thunderbirds. The East Coast people hold it strongly. Seacor. Thunderbird. The story of a man who is captured and burned to death. And told he did and rose from the dead and lived again. Pequot, Thunderbird. Another mythology about this tailwind called the Christ. The burning was the all-consuming death. He was burned by wood as Christ was killed on wood, a wooden cross. And the all-consuming, never-can-come-back death was broken, and he rose again. Pequot, Thunderbird, Jesus the Christ. And in the Plains State, we had the sun dance. I've asked many over the years, many people of importance, many people that if I mention their name, you know, but I won't. I've asked them, what does the sun dance mean to you? And I have gotten from every single individual this a most beautiful meaning, but never identical. Each has their own meaning. And I ask them, would you like to know what I have found in the Iowa have found the sun dance to be? Yes, always a reply. And I would proceed to tell them, in the old days, as today, things have changed a little bit in the Sundance. Maybe more a little bit, but still basics are there. In the old days, when it was time to do ceremony, to give honor, and to do great prayer, the elders would get together and they would pray about it, and they would find the place that this was to be through prayer. And they would call their scouts, and the scouts would go out and all directions looking for the proper tree to be planted in a great circle for the sun dance. And they would come back and report, I found this tree, I found that tree. And the elders would pray about where to go to look at this tree or that tree. And they would get their answer. And they would go to this tree and that tree, a number of trees. And they would look these streets over, and they would gather together at that tree, or beside, close to that tree, and pray to the Creator of this tree to be the tree.
until eventually they would find the OK, D3. Then they would send for runners, or send runners up, for young men to come to this place, and to bring a young virgin girl. And they would do so. They would have a number of young strong men come. And sometimes these trees were 2-3 days away. Not very often, but sometimes they were that far away from where the circle was to be made and the dance was to be. And anyway, the young men would come, and the virgin would come, and they would dress the virgin in an all-white high dress, and they would give her a tomahawk, and in later days, a metal axe, or has it rather. And the young men would go and denude the tree of all limbs, except at the very, very top, where there was always left a streak of green, naturally growing. Then this young woman, they would do prayer and ceremony, and this young virgin girl, woman, whatever, today it's kind of got to be baby,
yeah.
Terrible, but nevertheless, she would go screaming at this tree and strike it 3 times. 1, 2, 3. And her job was done. And then they would cut the tree, and they would line the men up in the way the tree was to fall. And these men would catch the tree before it hit the ground, men on each side of the tree. And some of these trees could be quite long, 60 foot or so. And remember, they were green, they were heavy. And then they would head off towards the great circle prepared. And there would be relays of men, never once allowing that tree to touch the ground. Then they would bring it to the great circle, and with great fanfare and prayers and ceremony, they would plant this tree into the very dead center of the great circle. And then eventually, those who were praying would tie lines of leather or horsehair, his aid of the types of line, to the tree up towards the top, and put skewers on it, made of wood or bone, and pierced their skin and tied to that. And they would lean back, and they would pray, and they would dance to the drums. And in the old days, when they were exhausted and fell down, old ladies who were given the responsibility and honor would go and cover that exhausted, half-dead dancer grave with a blanket. Today, most of them were taken down at night and going to bed, then shoved out in the morning and go empty again. Things have changed. It's slowly going a little bit changed. But nevertheless, and then when the time came, they would pull away from these skewers and rip their skins loose and leave great gashes in their hide. And they would be taken to be doctored, and they would stay a certain time being doctored. And then when they walked out, people would touch them, and the people had touched me were healed of whatever disease. Now, that is the Sun Dance of old. Today it's quite similar. But nowhere have I received the original meaning of the Sun Dance. Hear me, brothers and sisters, hear me, Blue Water. We, most of us, did not know how to write. I said most of us. The Cherokee had writing on before white men, our pilgrims came. And so did the Crees in Canada. Actual writing, not petroglyphs. But you people don't know that. But nevertheless, there might have been others as well, but they still are normal. But nevertheless, due to the fact that we did not have writing, and those that did have writing, it was in a society, secret society, that they didn't pass on to those outside of the society. So you might as well say even those that had writing had no writing, because the vast majority had no way. And then petroglyphs, scratchings on walls. So we had no way to write the things that we knew. And
Indian is not the Bible, you listen carefully and you start thinking about these things, please. Use your wisdom in here. The circle, the great circle with a hole dug in its dead center, like most people are nations make our sweat lodges. The circle represented all life, every planet, every being on those planets, the stars, the rain, stasis, our own peoples, our own world, our sun, our galaxy, and beyond, our worms, everything that takes to make life, our trees, our clouds, our weathers. It represents everything, the all and never ending, the great circle of life. All life. Life beyond what the norm thinks exists. Believe me, there certainly are other people. We are not all. But that's up to you to accept or reject as your path. And, by the way, I want all to understand, this one does not want you to believe a word I say. Hear me. Don't believe a word I say. Test it. Through prayer, through study, through contemplation. Test it and find out it's right.